All right. And with that, kids, if you want to head out to Kid Connection, straight out the back doors, hang a right. If you're visiting with us today and you're thinking, wait a second, someone's going to take my kids for me? Yes. But if you have no idea what Kid Connection is, it's a time when the kids have a lesson, a message that's specifically on their level. And if you are think it might be a good idea and you want to try it, you are welcome to join them and make that transition with them in the chapel this morning. So we are finishing up today a series we began on the first Sunday of January, a series called Think Again, and we have been consistently asking this question as Christians: does it matter how we think and what we think about? And the answer keeps coming up, yes, absolutely, it matters. Today we conclude the series. If you haven't been with us throughout it and you're thinking, I'd like to know more about that, you can go to our website and you can go to our podcast and you will find information there on how to listen to all the previous sermons in this series. But today we're going to focus on people and peace, because at the conclusion of what we've been studying, which is only two verses, Philippians 4, 8 and 9, we have all of these, think about these things, right? Think in these ways. But then Paul concludes the thought, and it's all one thought, where he shows us the value of mentors and the presence of God's peace. So let's dig right into it. Philippians chapter 4, for the last time in this series, verses 8 and 9. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice, and the God of peace will be with you. So we've unpacked these ideas one word at a time over the last 8 weeks or so. And now we get to the conclusion where Paul essentially says, I can tell you to think in these ways in part because you should have seen this way of thinking enacted in my life. In other words, this isn't just a philosophical exercise. You shouldn't just think about what would it mean to be true or right or pure. No, thinking eventually translates into life. Paul is saying, you had me in your lives, teaching you, living among you. Basically, the ideas that he's been talking about, thinking in these ways, took up flesh, was incarnated within Paul. Whatever you saw in me and heard from me, put those things into practice. Think of it this way. If you were to think about how to be a generous person with your time, with your resources, with your energy, with your passion, with your home, with whatever you have, but if all you ever did was think about ways to be generous, but you never actually put them into action, would you be a generous person? Not really. You'd be a person with a lot of great philosophy on how to be a generous person, but you wouldn't actually be living a generous life. So this is where Paul sort of takes all these ways of thinking and says, and you should have seen this in action in my life. It's not the only time Paul speaks this way when writing to one of these churches. For instance, in 1 Corinthians, it's Paul writing again. He says in chapter 11, verse 1, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Follow in my footsteps, because my footsteps should actually lead you deeper into the knowledge and experience of Jesus. Again, in Philippians 3, the book we've been in this entire time, just a chapter before, he says to that church, join together in following my example, brothers and sisters. And just as you have us as a model, keep your eyes on those who live as we do. Look for our footsteps, our spiritual footsteps, and follow after us. Led me to this question this week that we'll circle back to at the end, but think about for a moment, who are the people in your life, past and present, who fill this crucial role of mentoring? Who has been or currently is a mentor for you? Whose footsteps do you observe and go, yes, these footsteps lead me closer to Jesus? Because those are relationships, my friends, as Christians, we desperately need. They're all throughout Scripture. It's a very biblical idea of these footsteps we follow, the mentors that we have in our lives. Joshua had Moses. Elisha had Elijah. Jesus, of course, had the 12. And even further into the New Testament, the guy Paul, we've been talking about in Philippians, he had a young protege named Timothy. The idea of mentoring and following in the footsteps of someone else is thoroughly biblical and tremendously valuable. So here's the question I have for you, sort of a follow-up, and this one hurts a little bit. Are you comfortable saying something similar to Paul? Can you say, follow me as I model following Jesus? Now, is there a little part of you that goes, maybe not yet? I would like for that to be true, but I'm not sure that I can make that, you know, that proclamation. And I get it. There is a built-in sense of humility there that's actually good. It's good that you would kind of go, well, I don't know. But I want to make this really clear. A statement like this is not about perfection. It's about pursuit. And here's what I mean by that. By saying, follow me as I follow Jesus, you're not saying I will make a perfect footstep for you. But what you're saying is, I am consistently pursuing Jesus. I am going after him. And if you follow after me, you will go in a direction that's not perfect, but it's a direction that will lead you closer and deeper into who Jesus is and what he has for you. It's about pursuit and not perfection. And again, I actually think that if there's somebody you have said, follow in my footsteps, and they see you trip and fall and wipe out, that actually is hugely valuable, because then that person sees how you, by God's grace, will stand back up and continue pursuing Jesus. Are we willing? Are we able? Are we interested in saying, I'm pursuing Jesus, and you can follow in my footsteps? This idea of actions coming from our thoughts is something that's a very powerful idea, I think, that our thoughts lead to actions which then shape our lives. A couple of quotes get us thinking in that direction. First, this one: watch your thoughts and they will become words. Watch your words, they'll become actions. Watch your actions, they will become habits. Watch your habits, they become character. And watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. And I love the flow. Watch your thoughts, and it begins with our thoughts. But our thoughts then get manifested all the way down the line and tremendously shape who we are. There's some disagreement on where this quote actually comes from, over as much as almost 200 years difference. Some people attribute it to Ralph Waldo Emerson, some people to Margaret Thatcher, but a lot of people believe it was actually put together by a guy named Frank Outlaw, who was the guy who started the Buy Low grocery store chain in the southern United States. And can I just say that I love that combination? Ralph Waldo Emerson, Margaret Thatcher, Frank Outlaw. I picture him as a Texan with the boots and the whole deal, starting his own restaurant chain, because that's what you do, right? But who can, I mean, beyond who said it, it's true. Our thoughts seep into everything that comes after, and eventually our lives are shaped by them. The great theologian C.S. Lewis said it in a slightly more Christianized way when he said this: every time you make a choice, which is where our thoughts lead to, our choices, every time you make a choice, you are turning the central part of who you are into something a little different than it was before. And taking your life as a whole, with all of your innumerable choices, all your life long, you are slowly turning this central thing into a heavenly creature or a hellish creature. Either into a creature that is in harmony with God and other creatures and with itself, or else into one that's in a state of war and hatred with God and its fellow creatures and with itself. Each of us, at each moment, is progressing to one state or the other. Our thoughts form our choices. Our choices form our actions, character, destiny. It's all tied together, and our thoughts are really where it begins. So our thoughts have a lot to do with how we build our lives. We may not think that on the surface, but the ways that we think and what we think about have a tremendous impact on how we are building our lives. And I want to focus on the idea of building your life. Because there's another passage I want to launch from today, I think, that's a great complement to this Philippians 4 stuff we've been in. There's a parable Jesus tells at the very end of the Sermon on the Mount that's about building your life that I want to reference this morning. Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 24. Jesus is speaking and he says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, and yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. I want to use this passage because I think it's a great parallel. You know, the words of Jesus and these words we've been studying in Philippians 4 and how we build our lives when we utilize them and put them into practice. When they're not just thoughts, but we give flesh to them. And one of the real jarring things I realized as I read this, and maybe I knew it before, but it really came just, it was starkly in front of me, is that it's very possible to hear words that are constructive regarding a stable and healthy Christian life and disregard them altogether. So let me make it a little more clear. It's really, really possible to be in church and completely... Being in church is not enough. You could be here and hear all of my words and they could deflect off of you and not be put into practice. Jesus said people heard his words, and I am confident they were way better than mine, right? They heard his words and disregarded them. The hearing is important, but the hearing and then putting into practice is what actually builds and shapes our lives. I was actually talking to Mike about this earlier this week because we usually bounce sermon ideas off one another, and he said, you know, I taught this recently with the youth group and had this realization, and he said, you can steal it, it's fine. But he said, notice that Jesus says, build your house upon the rock, singular, build it upon the rock, which obviously is Jesus. But he said, when you build upon the sand, like the other man in the parable, you're actually building your life upon a million tiny little rocks instead of one solid rock. And he said, if you think about it, if all those millions of tiny rocks represent your identity, because if your identity is in Christ, it's in other things. And if that identity shifts, and he gave the example of, you know, if you're like the football player, like if you're the star football player, but then some kid moves in from another district and you're no longer the big football star, that identity piece, that little rock starts to shift, and no wonder everything else starts to shift with it. Don't build your house on a million tiny rocks. Build your house on the one solid rock of Jesus. Find your identity in him. Now, in the parable, both houses are built, and initially both stand, both are safe, both are useful. And let's take a moment to realize that when Jesus talks about building houses, it's a lot different in the ancient days than it is today. Because today we have all these wonderful things. Well, they might be wonderful depending on if you've ever tried to build your own house or even improve your own house. We have these extra codes and regulations that have to be followed, and they're there to keep you safe. Those did not exist in the ancient world, right? Houses were much differently put together, shall we say, to the point. Remember the story where there's a man who needs healed and his friends bring him to Jesus, but they can't quite get there? How do they get their friend to Jesus? They dig through the roof because it's made of like earthen type material. They dig through the roof. So in Jesus' context, having a strong foundation is even more important than it would be today with our more modern methods and materials. The strong foundation of the rock. They're both built. They both function perfectly fine, at least initially. If you walked past them, you would say, yeah, they're on different foundations, but they both serve their purpose. But when does that change? The difference can be observed when the storms come. The difference in those houses is sort of hidden until the storms come. The rain falls, the floodwaters rise. It says that the wind beats against the house. Reminds me of earlier this week, if you saw in the news, the tornadoes that just ripped through the southern United States and killed 20-some-odd people, right? If you would have walked a month ago past all those houses, you would have said, yeah, they're functional. They work. But man, when the storm came, it became clear that their functionality was pretty limited in the face of winds that were upwards of 150, 160 miles an hour. And I got to tell you, this was my biggest takeaway from this parable that I have known for years, that I sang about as a kid, right? Maybe some of you know that song as well. But my biggest takeaway was this: the survival of those houses during the storm did not depend on what the builders did in response to the storm, but what they did before the storm arrived. How many times as Christians do we think everything's fine, and then the storm comes and we go, things are slipping and I'm being blown around, right? The difference in the houses was not how they responded when the storm came, but what they actually did even before the storm was ever there. Now, if you put into practice these ways of thinking we've been talking about, first of all, it will change your day-to-day life as a growing Christian, absolutely. But do you notice what else you're doing? You are further building on the rock when you learn to think and live in these ways, so that when the storms come, not if, when the storms come, you will be solidly founded on the rock of Jesus. Because the storms will come. And it's not what we have heard that will make the difference, but what we have heard and put into practice that will make the difference. And Paul concludes this whole thought, the ways of thinking and the mentorship, he concludes it by saying, "And the God of peace," in the middle of all of it, "the God of peace will be with you." Jamie Rasmussen, the man who wrote the book, How Joyful People Think, that's sort of been the inspiration for this entire series, he says this. The verse, that part of the verse, might actually most grammatically straightforward be translated in this way: "And the God who is peace will be with you." And it may be splitting hairs a little bit to say, is there a difference between the peace of God and the God of peace? And maybe that's getting too fine of an edge to it, but I do think this. I think sometimes we like, yeah, I would love the peace of God because I would like to get things from God. But boy, the God of peace, I don't know about that. I don't know if I want to be that close to God. I want the peace to come. Can he send it from a distance and I'll just catch it? I'll catch it in my spiritual bucket. But do we want the God of peace? Because that's also the God of justice and holiness. But that God of peace is present with us. In the book, Jamie uses an analogy I want to use to get us thinking about this in a deep way. Because listen, presence is a powerful thing. Imagine it this way. Imagine you receive a phone call, and the person on the other end of the phone says, you are a winner. You entered into some, contest, sweepstakes, whatever, and you've won! Right? And here's what you've won. You have won a 3-week, all-expenses-paid vacation to the tropical destination of your choice. I'll let you come up with that in your own brain. To the tropical destination of your choice. 3 weeks, all expenses included for you and a friend. So bring the person most important to you in the world and come along for this amazing vacation experience. You hang up the phone, which I don't know why I do this, because nobody does that anymore. Nobody has a phone that does this. So you hang up the phone, right? You hang up the phone, and then immediately you start planning. Oh, it's going to be incredible. You look up the weather forecast. You think, what's around there to do? Because they're paying for the flight. They're paying for the food. They're paying for the hotel. What's this hotel look like? Oh, and then 2 days later, imagine you get another phone call, and they say, we've got an offer for you. We've decided that we are going to upgrade everything. Still 3 weeks, but you're going to get first-class airline. You're going to get 5-star hotels. You're going to get the choicest food, the best activities. But there's one catch. You have to come by yourself. Now, for the extremely introverted in the room, they're like, glory, hallelujah. But for most of us, it's like, will it be as enjoyable if I'm not in the presence of someone that I love, if I'm not sharing that experience with someone else, if the presence isn't a shared thing? Presence is a powerful, powerful thing. And I think we know in our brains, but we forget that God is always present. Our awareness of God's presence can come and go, but God is always present with us. It's not a matter of will God show up. That's what I really don't like that phrase. I know what people mean, but, and then God showed up. Where was he before? He's always present. Now, our awareness of that presence is what can ebb and flow. And as I thought about living out these ways we've been studying, ways that we think, which then therefore lead to action, I realized that some of the peace we receive when we learn to think and live in these ways is somewhat of a natural consequence. And here's what I mean by natural. If you train yourself to think and live in ways that are joyful, lovely, excellent, right, then you will generally be led to people and places of peace, generally speaking, right? But there are other elements of what we have talked about. There are some ways that we have discussed where you think, specifically ways like think about what is true and what is just. And if you think and live in ways that are truthful and just, you will bump up against a world that is teeming with lies and injustice. And in those moments, my friends, you will need the God of peace to be with you. Because if we truly embrace thinking and living in ways that are true and just, and we speak for truth and we speak against injustice, there will be reactions from the world in which that is the norm. And we will desperately need the God of peace to be present with us. And that God of peace present with us, I want to finish with this idea. Just one verse earlier than everything we've studied. We've studied Philippians 4, 8, and 9. Just the very verse before, like bookends this idea of God's peace. But do you know what it teaches us? That peace transcends all understanding. Now, I love the Bible in its totality. There are some parts I really, really love. This is one of my favorite phrases. That Paul says, listen, you can have the peace of God, and it's a peace that goes beyond your ability to understand. And initially, I think we go, wait a second, if I can't understand it, then do I really, I don't know, I need to be able to explain it. I need to be able to map it out. I need a bullet list. I need a formula. But God's peace, and I've seen people in some of the deepest and darkest places in their lives, whether it's hurt, pain, poor decisions, loss, but I've seen people who still have peace, and even they can't explain it. Do you know why they can't explain it? Because they don't understand it, but they still receive it. Because that God who is peace pours his peace into us, and we can't necessarily map it out in a list of bullet points or show you how we got there. But it's a peace that we receive and we celebrate nonetheless. So a few ways to consider all of this stuff we've talked about this morning, ways that we can reflect on it and maybe put it into practice today and this week. Here's the first one. Consider the people who have been the most significant Christian mentors in your life. Thank God for them in this moment, and then make plans right now to contact them somehow this week and thank them for their guidance and their inspiration in your life. Whether it's someone who presently is that mentor you're following in their footsteps, or maybe it's someone from your past, you can thank God for them today, even if they're not still with us. But if they're still alive, I'd encourage you, reach out, phone call, text message, postcard, whatever it takes, carrier pigeon, I don't care. Figure out a way to tell those people, thank you so much for being footsteps that I could follow. I'm telling you, it will mean the world to them. Secondly, how comfortable are you saying something like, follow me as I model following Jesus? And if there's some hesitation in that idea, dig down into that and say, wow, what gives me hesitation to be able to say, follow me as I'm pursuing Jesus? Because there might be something there you need to dig down into a little bit more deeply. Third, which way of thinking from this entire series is one that you need to utilize a little bit more as you build your house upon the rock, as you make those deposits into that strong foundation so that when the storms come, you will be held secure? And then lastly, in what areas of your life do you need to be filled with the peace from God that surpasses understanding? Is there a way in which, or a situation in which, or an area in which you would say, God, I am troubled at this thing, and even if I can't understand that thing or understand your peace, I really need it and desire it in my life? So take a moment or two of silence to reflect and think and pray. If you want to close your eyes or bow your head, you're welcome to, or just read through those words. And then in a moment, I will close that time with a word of prayer, and then we will sing one more song together before we go.